Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hello! Welcome to another Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. It's me, Rich Herring, speaking. My guest this week is Deborah Frances White, who has a lot of amazing stories about her incredible life. You're going to love this one. If you like these shows, please support me by coming to see my written and rehearsed stand-up, unlike this show, which is all made up as I go along. I'm doing a show called The Best, which is 90 minutes of my best material, in my own arrogant opinion. It's not really arrogant, you know, it's just the best that I have. You can see all the details of that on my website, richardherring.com. I'm going all around the UK from February to May 2017. And also, you can buy my DVD, Happy Now, at gofasterstripe.com, along with all my old shows, if you want to catch up on those. If you can't come and see the best of, why not just buy all the DVDs and downloads, and then you can make a best of your own out of those. Anyway, let's sit back and enjoy Deborah Frances White. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. It's nice to have you here. It's Halloween today. Woo! And please welcome a man who died on this very spot exactly 10 years ago today. Have you ever seen a ghost? You will have now. It's Richard Herring! Oh, yeah, yeah, we're back. We're back big time. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging out with Avril Lavigne. She knows... She's got this boyfriend who he loves going on skateboards so much. She calls him a skate boy. He calls it Rehullistopper, so I don't know if that's catching. I don't know if I've done that one before. I feel I might have done that. So it's Halloween today as we record this, which on the tube journey in here, most women seem to just use that as an excuse to dress up as a cat, it seems. That seems to be the thing of choice. But the clocks went back at the weekend, which is fine, but I've got a baby now, so it's really fucking annoying, isn't it? Because you've just got them settled into a pattern. I was waking up at 7:30 every morning, and then my baby doesn't know the clocks have gone back, so now I wake up at 6:30. But it does mean that I get to see baby Jake again, which I'd forgotten about. Do you remember that one? You guys should get up at 6 o'clock, because turn on CBeebies. There's some amazing fucking trippy shit on there. It's about a family that live in a windmill, I think, and there's 10 of them. They've got 10 kids. one of them draws faces on his knees. I don't know if it's a real thing. At the weekend, the Gemma Chan documentary was on where they made a robot of Gemma Chan. I tuned into that. That was... If I was Gemma Chan, I mean, she was all... They didn't make the lower half, so what was the point? But they skirted around that issue. But the guys who made the robot, I'm not sure about them. If I was Gemma Chan, I wouldn't be happy leaving the Gemma Chan, even the top half of the Gemma Chan robot, in their custody. I'm absolutely certain, and it isn't even libel because it definitely happened, that they at least tongued that. That is, and that's a terrible thing. I should say hello to Matt Barker. Hello, thank you for sponsoring the episode. So you get some champagne. Is this your wife here or mistress? Wife, that's good. Because like women would be impressed, I think, with someone being given money to podcasts like this. So, you know, didn't have to bring his wife, but it was nice. I just couldn't believe that you were his wife, to be honest. And I mean, look at him and look at you. I mean, it's ridiculous. But he's obviously got a bit of money to spare. Are you enjoying that? What you're drinking there is Charles Le Couvreur champagne. That is the top. That's from Waitrose, that champagne. Yeah. It's cost £15 a bottle, so it's good stuff. That's about. I thought I had more to say. Oh no, Richard Osman. Well, I wasn't on Celebrity Pointless this week, but I was mentioned on Celebrity Pointless this week because the two people that I've failed to win on Celebrity Pointless Celebrities, it should be called, but that seems rude. Rona Cameron and Rob Webb were both on, and Richard Osman said that I was the worst contestant that had ever been on Pointless. And what got me is both Rona Cameron and Rob Webb went, yeah. And it had been their fault both times. I'm not going to go on about this. They didn't go, no, excuse me, Richard, can I just say I think it was my fault? They didn't do for saying to pow for a single artist. I can't remember anything about it. We're going to crack straight on with the show. My guest tonight is probably best known as the party guest from Lipsticker. That's why we're all here tonight to see. Please welcome Deborah Frances White, ladies and gentlemen. Amazing. Thank you very much. Amazing.
Hello.
Hello. You look. Am I allowed to? Because you're a feminist. Am I allowed to say you look very nice?
I'm a guilty feminist.
Okay.
So yes,
phew, thank goodness.
That's the name of my podcast. That's the loophole. You could tell a feminist they look nice.
Yeah. No. I was only joking.
Yeah. Just don't say nice tits.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the right circumstances.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, there are certain circumstances in which you could admire my tits and it would be fine. Let's brainstorm some of those.
Well, one of my emergency questions is about whether it's acceptable to... whether you would carry on a date with someone or even being friends with someone who used the word boobies.
Oh.
I would not. And if I was in bed with someone and they used the word boobies, I would leave the bed.
You'd just get out, even in the mid-thrust?
Yeah, I would say that's it.
You just pull out.
That is the end.
Get out of the bed.
Yeah.
Just back. Would you explain or would you just back out of the room slowly?
I don't think I would need to explain. I would just say, sorry, that is
unacceptable. No, you would, because for them, that word is normal, obviously, or they wouldn't be using it.
Touch my boobies.
No. I can see you saying, let's have a break. Let's talk about our boundaries and let's go again. But just pulling out, getting out of the bed and slowly backing into the ensuite, coming back out in a bathrobe and leaving the hotel. I'm assuming this isn't a hotel because you're married.
might be my wife saying it, and I'm just walking away from leaving the marriage behind. She's into it, luckily, so she'll now know not to say. She's making a mental checklist.
That's a really interesting one, though, isn't it? Because... if you're married to somebody who suddenly starts saying boobies and she's the mother of your child, it's going to be much trickier to get out of that than if it was just sort of a one-night stand on the circuit.
Yeah, it's true. Especially when I'm going to suckle our child with my boobies.
No.
That would be awful. That's doubly upsetting.
I had a friend who... she was giving birth.
Yeah.
Not at the time when she was about to give birth.
Yeah.
And she said to her husband, I just find this whole thing about the baby's going to want to suck on my... breasts.
Yeah, that's what's acceptable.
Acceptable.
My mammary glands, as they become the minute you've had a child.
Right. hot. She said, the baby's going to want to suck on my breast, and I find it very uncomfortable because my breasts have only ever been sexual to me, and I just find this is odd. And her husband said, oh, don't worry, darling, it's going to be all normal, it's going to be natural, it's just going to be fine, you'll just feel it's natural. And she went, that's all right for you to say. What if the baby wanted to suck on your balls? And I said, you'd have a hard time explaining that to the police officer. The baby wanted it. It's just... But she said, yeah, I mean, it's true, though. It's a bit of an odd thing that something that is quite sexual at some point in your life just gets a part-time job.
Yeah.
And just, it's like, for me, it's just like if my knees started dispensing pizza.
Yeah.
So why is this suddenly... Do you see what I mean?
It's a very odd thing. I think it's awful, and all women are perverts. For turning a natural, beautiful, milk-giving thing into something sexual that is awful.
I'm not sure that was my point. I feel that the point you think I've made there, Rich, is a different point.
All I'm saying is you're the feminist and you brought tits up first. That is the surprising thing about this conversation. So, do you remember you must have Lipsticker wasn't that long ago. What was Lipsticker?
Oh God.
You were a party guest, didn't you?
Oh God, yes.
Have I chosen something accidentally?
No, not at all. I basically somebody rang me up and said, you do improvisation. They're making this film in North London. They need a couple of extra people to do an improv scene. Would you come along? And I was thinking, oh, yeah, sure. I'm sure it'll be something like Confetti. You know, one of those sort of slightly less good British goes at Christopher Guest.
I do. I'm aware of that.
and if you were in Confetti or anything, then that was brilliant.
Robert Webb was in it, so fuck him. He's naked in it. You can see his boobies.
Can you? Oh, yeah. Was he the tennis one?
Yeah. No, he's the naked one.
Yeah, but aren't they...
There's a couple that play tennis, played by the girl from Man Stroke Woman, called the Canadian woman. God, my nerds are letting me down. The bloke who is in... I mean, I should know his name, because he's quite a good... He used to play Adrian Mole, and is in that hospital thing. God, my brain's gone. Yeah, Stephen Mangan. So you know Stephen Mangan. What about the other Canadian lady? No one? Gosh, that's show business, isn't it?
Just to be clear, that wasn't the movie I was in, so it might be a dead end in terms of us trying to sort of come up with the IMDb list.
I don't know, I think Confetti was... we should talk about Confetti for the podcast.
Listen, Confetti, while great, but I thought it would be that style thing because it was improvisation, and they asked... me to come along with my husband, who also does impro, and they said, because we need a couple, and you know, you'll already have a rapport, they said, misunderstanding that we've been married for a long time, and you lose the rapport about year three. And along we went, and it was one of my mates who was playing the other couple, the woman from the other couple was one of my mates, and we went in, and it became very clear very early on that this movie was about the most horrendous subject matter. It was this dark war film with scenes of, I mean, just terrible, terrible scenes of people being violated in horrible ways, and this was the one birthday party scene sandwiched between the worst atrocities could be committed by humankind, and we were like, oh, we don't know if we want to be in this now, but anyway, all right, we're here, we'll do the birthday scene. And so we sat down, and it was an Israeli director, and he said, he was like, right, pretend this is a party and you're having a lovely time, and she is a birthday girl and you're giving her a lovely time. So we all start joshing about and doing, you know, some of our best ad libs, Rich, ad libs, you can imagine them. Then he just said, cut, this is terrible. None of you are funny. None of you are having a good time. We cannot use this. Go again, be funny, have a good time. We're like, oh, okay. And then we started trying to have, you know, ad lib. Yeah. And then he went, cut, this is terrible. You are with the wrong man. And he pointed at my friend, I think I can say, Olivia Poulet. Do you know Olivia Poulet?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So she's in the thick of it. Yeah. She plays Chris Addison's girlfriend in the thick of it. And so she's a very good improviser because a lot of the thick of it is improvised. And this kind of thing is right up her street. So she'd auditioned and got the rapport with this other guy. And they were proper people in it. They're proper characters.
Yeah.
We were just coming along to fill space. We were literally meant to be sitting on the sofa going, oh, you're so old. And suddenly he said, no, you go with him. You look better with him. You don't look good with him. And it was my actual husband. And I was like, oh, okay. And Olivia was like, but I auditioned with him. We had a whole band to work on. We've done rehearsals. No, he is not your husband anymore. She is. And I was like, oh, no. Anyway, we did the scene. It was terrible. I've never seen the film because I just couldn't bring myself to A, to watch the atrocities.
Yeah.
Of the
Why
actual.
Why did they want an improvised party in the middle of the film? it's a bit heavy, this film. Let's get some kids in to do some comedy impro and then shout at them for not being fun. Come on, you've got to lighten up. This is a very serious film. We need some funny
Basically,
jokes.
Yeah. We were the comic relief in the middle of the whole thing was an atrocity, including the impro.
Yeah. Wait a minute, Lipsticker, if you want to watch that.
Don't.
Lipsticka.
Please don't.
I'm definitely download it. If it's on iTunes, I'm getting it tonight.
No. Oh, God.
So, look, you've done a lot of amazing stuff, so it's kind of, and your life is pretty incredible as well. So there's a lot of things to talk to you about. Your Radio 4 show, which I listened to the whole first series of this morning, which is great, called... That's how good it is, because usually I just listen to one. I thought, I've got to listen to all of this. It's good. It's called Deborah Francis White Rolls the Dice.
Yes.
And so you're basically about big things that have happened in your life where you've taken a chance.
Life moments. Yeah. So episode one was about finding my biological mother.
Yeah.
Because up until the age of recently, I had not ever seen a picture of anyone related to me. Like, I didn't know what anyone would related to me might even look like in theory.
Yeah.
Basically, what I did was I found out my biological mother's name and then just Googled, because I didn't want to meet anyone. I just thought I'd have a little noodle around on the internet, like you do, you know, just all, like you noodle around for ex-boyfriends or, you know, school friends, just to check that things aren't going as well for them as they are for you.
Yeah.
Sort of like that, really, just a curiosity. And when I first found out, I actually rang up to find out what her name was. And when I was 21, I did that.
Yeah.
And they said, the lady said, I can tell you her name. I was born in Australia, raised in Australia, by the way. And so just to be clear, it's very different there, because in Australia, adoption has been handled more or less properly. Here, it has been handled almost exclusively by nuns. It's people who seem to me to be uniquely unqualified to understand anything going into or coming out of a vagina. So I don't really... But there, you just ring up the government department. I mean, there, obviously, they had a... Well, Australia's got the opposite problem, because the government were very keen for an industrial-sized adoption program. So they pretty much just snatched babies out of prams, shouted unfit mother and took them. So we've got a huge adoption program, because they just decided, no, you're not keeping that. But they were brilliant at the paperwork. That's the thing about fascism, often very competently run. So you ring the government department.
Yeah.
And the lady said, oh, no, I can't tell you a name unless we give her your name. And I was like, oh, no, I don't want that. No. And then she said, I can tell you a first name, because that information is not identifying. And I said, oh, great. So she said, I'll have to put it on hold, because that information is in a more secret file. So off she went. She came back and she went, I'm so sorry. I can't tell you. I can tell most people, but not you. You are an exception to the rule. And I said, why? And she said, because your birth mother's first name was so unusual as to be identifying. And I thought, well, there you are. My birth mother is Germaine Greer. I lived on that for years. I would tell people that at parties. It was sort of a joke. But I kind of secretly used to think, yeah, makes sense. She's done a lot for the sisterhood. It's a good thing.
Could have been Cher. I'd have gone for Cher.
Well, that's true. I'd thought of that.
Yeah.
Madonna.
Could be
Madonna, yeah, it could have been. I don't think Madonna's old enough to be my birth mother. I mean, she would have had to be quite young. No, it could have been Catherine the Great. I mean, there's an enormous amount of people it could have been, but I settled on Germaine as an Australian feminist.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Does feminism pass down genetically? I'm like, is that?
That's what I was hoping. Now she's gone all transphobic. I'm very pleased it's not her.
Yeah, that's true. But you did. It's a very moving. I did some stuff came out of my eyes. I don't know what was happening at the end of that. It was very moving.
Did you cry about my?
I did. It was very
moving. Finding my birth mother.
I don't want people should go and listen to it, because it's all still up online, isn't it? It's on the radio player still. I think
it's some of it's on iPlayer now. Yeah. If you're quick, and I'm sure they'll put it on iTunes. alongside lipsticker.
They will,
get
yeah.
that.
Just to get the lipsticker crowd to listen. No, it's a very moving, a very interesting story. But, and then also you were in the Jehovah's Witnesses with your adoptive family.
Yes, I was.
Quite late on in your life, so not you weren't... you were.
No, I had a totally normal childhood, yeah. Rich. Totally normal childhood. And then when I was 14, my parents just decided we should study the Bible with Jehovah's Witnesses. We're a totally normal family. And they just were like, oh, I don't know. Some stuff went down. And my mother said, right, we're going to study the Bible with Jehovah's Witnesses. They're going to come around every Friday night. And I was 14. I mean, that's not the dream Friday night for anybody. But we sat around the table, and for 2 years, every Friday night, and until it's your... But I think... I mean, I always joke that my parents must have thought adolescence was an ideal time to join a mind-controlling cult. And it is, because your brain's very plastic.
Yeah.
I was very, very brainwashed. So it's extraordinary for you to believe, Rich,
yes. That
I genuinely thought, after 2 years of heavy brainwashing, and you also start going to the meetings, so you're 3-4 times a week, this is being fed to you when your brain is at its most open to ketamine or Jesus. And I genuinely thought that Armageddon was going to come. So God, very soon, was going to bring about a terrible destruction on the earth.
That one might be true, though, to be fair.
And, well, that is looking more likely at the moment. There's a lot of Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Yeah. There's more than four, though. There's about 12 Horsemen of the Apocalypse that have come out in 2016. And so just to start off at 10. So I thought Armageddon would come, and then I wouldn't die if I was good and went along with what the Jehovah's Witnesses said. You would, obviously, because you were never going to join the Jehovah's Witnesses. No. It's not going to happen. So I would then have to try and convert you. Otherwise, I would also die. And then we would live forever on paradise earth. So I would never die. I just thought I would never die.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believed that. I thought that was true.
I think that's... See, I don't think that's a very... Maybe when you're 14 it is, but it's not a very... nice thing to think that you're never going to die. Don't you think that would be awful? Even if you're in paradise, it would get annoying, wouldn't it? After infinity.
Yeah. What year would you like to stop doing this podcast, though? If I told you you could do it forever and ever, ever,
yeah.
I know, it might be an appeal.
It's like there's never a point where you go, yeah. I mean, maybe there is a point where you finally go, I'm ready to go, but usually you go, yeah, I'd like another couple of months. But the idea of like living for 150,
yeah, but that's because you're going to get.
Years.
That's because in this system of things, yeah. Rich, you're going to get old, and then the reason you want to die is you lose your faculties, and it's not fun anymore.
I think it'd be boring. I think it would just.
You're going to be young in this paradise. You're going to be young.
Heaven is boring because you've lost your body, which is all the fun bit anyway.
This isn't heaven, though. This isn't heaven. This is paradise earth.
But you're still a Jehovah's Witness, so you're not allowed to give oral sex to anyone or receive it. So what's that? That's an eternity without getting a blowjob.
That is. And now you've come up finally with an objection that I can get behind. Up until then, all your objections were terrible. But I'm actually feeling... you're making me try and convince you of this paradise. I feel it's almost like a door frame. No one's ever asked me to convince them of it since I left. Think of it this way. You'll be young.
Yeah.
You'll be able to live with your wife forever.
She's to be honest, I only got married because it's till death us do part. That was the only...
There's a closing point to it.
Then after that, I'm single again. That was like, I thought, I can commit for 50 more years.
In what world are
years.
You going to live longer than Katie? You're not going to live
longer.
No,
I'll be dead, but then I'll be single.
You said you'll be single again.
I'll be single when I'm dead.
You were clearly implying she was going to die first.
I'll be dead.
You don't say I'll be single again if you're dead.
I'm talking about the afterlife.
You were saying she was going to die first and you would be single again. Is she in?
She is in.
Oh, my God.
I was clearly saying I'll be dead and I'll be single again. And then in the afterlife,
anybody looking at the both of you is going to put their money on... Not that I want you to die first. I don't.
I should die first. But when I'm dead, I am single again. I don't want to live forever and then be, with all due respect to my wife, be stuck with her. And she can't even give me a blowjob even though I'm married to her. That is...
What?
Which, it's a mute point.
In a very real way, yeah.
But it's...
I think those days are gone. You've got a child. Come on now. What if she wanted to get married? I'd rather buried in the same grave plot, though.
That's all right. Yeah, I don't mind that.
Well, then you're not single. She's lying next to you for eternity.
Well, if I can
watching
get up.
Watching you.
I can get up if I'm alive after I'm dead. I'm either in heaven.
Yeah.
Going out with...
A series of supermodels.
A dead person I'd like to go out with.
What you'd like to date?
I can only think of the bloke who wrote Dad's Army. Perry.
You want to date?
I don't. That's the only dead person I could think of. So if I'm dead, my wife's still alive, and she's single now as well. What I'm saying, when she comes up to heaven and we've got eternity to go, I go, well, I'm with Jimmy Perry now. For the moment.
For the moment, sure.
It was till death us do part. That's the only reason I went along with this.
In a very real way, though, of all the people that died in 2016 you could have thought of, yeah. At least Prince and Bowie have a sort of bisexual energy.
Yeah.
It just feels like a really odd choice for you as a straight man to choose the
I really like Dad's Army.
What do you
and Ian Lavender's still alive.
What do you think the pillow talk would be? Don't panic, don't panic.
Be, I could go,
Mr. Man.
Go, how did you come up with that don't tell him Pike joke? And
yeah, I can see that being a great argument for best mates, flatmates. But... In terms of your main concern being afterlife blowjobs.
It was all I could think of. It was the only one I could think of.
I'm just questioning. I'm just putting it on the table and I'm putting a big question mark over it and I want you to think about it in your own time.
Okay.
It's important that you do.
Anyway, but, you know, that's the point. I don't want to live forever. I want to make the most of the time I've got here and then be dead and single again.
Yep,
even
okay.
If I'm a skeleton who only rises once a year on Halloween.
On that time, you need it to be a single.
I'm going to be single.
You're going to be
gonna
on whatever dead Tinder is.
Yeah.
You're going to be on.
Yeah. So I don't want your Jehovah's Witness rubbish because of that.
Well, I won't call again. Write you down. Richard Herring, no calling again. No. Let him die. Let him burn it up again.
But people did let you into their homes occasionally.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes scarily so. I had one incident where some bikers, well, a very, very big biker invited me in with another, we were both 18, another girl, really. We were both 18. And I remember it very clearly. I talk about it in the radio show, that going down this long corridor and realising how far the living space was from the front door.
Yeah.
And got into this back room, and there were all these bikers lying around, like, all high, and they sat us down, and they started asking questions, a bit like this.
Yeah.
It's a bit like emergency questions they were asking us, really. Yeah. It was a bit like this. And they started asking, so we were trying to tell them about the paradise, and which I always think, even at the time, I used to do material about this. When I was a Jehovah's Witness, I used to do comedy just for other Jehovah's Witnesses.
Really?
Yeah, I used to do comedy. And... that was my main gig as a Jehovah's Witness. Yeah. I was the sort of internal... I was the funniest Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a high bar to clear, I'll be honest with you. But that is where I trained as a Jehovah's Witness.
Isn't the guy from Community, Donald Glover, is he a Jehovah's Witness or no? Is he a Mormon?
He is a Jehovah's Witness, but he's not really. There's no signs of him being a Jehovah's Witness. What, in real life, do you mean?
I think he is in real life. Aren't they all what they are in real life in the sitcom?
There's no chance. Not a proper Jehovah's Witness couldn't be in a sitcom like that. There's sex and stuff in it. Wouldn't be allowed. But I remember these bikers going, we're trying to tell them about the paradise, which in the Watch... Have you seen the Watchtower magazine? Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, that they bring to the door? Yeah, the paradise is always depicted as people in national dress passing fruit to one another for eternity. It's just someone in a muumuu passing a pineapple to someone in a sari. Back and forth and back and forth and back and forth in perpetuity. I was trying to show him this picture, and he just looked at me and went... Are you allowed to have sex before marriage? And we went, no. Like, we were 18. And we looked like... We were dressed like Alice in Wonderland. I mean, it was... I always had, like, a little headband that I used to wear and sort of, you know how Jehovah's Witnesses dress. It's sort of like a dowdy off. Like, they do. They make you be dowdy. And that sometimes the elders will tell you, you're not being dowdy enough, be dowdier. That you wear a dress to a meeting and they'll go, is that dowdy? Would we call that dowdy? Would there be... No, that would be a 4 out of 10 for dowd. So you're very dowdy. So I was there in my daddy dress, and so I was this 18-year-old. We were very incredibly, you know, are you allowed to have sex before marriage? And we were like, no. And then he went, and are you married? We went, no. And then he went, so you're virgins. And I remember thinking, not for much longer. Which is a good rape joke. And I'll explain why. You're feeling scared for me in this moment. Let me deconstruct why it's a good rape joke. Because some people are like, no rape jokes are allowed ever. No rape jokes are allowed ever. And in fact, some people have gone, you go to comedy clubs where they have rape jokes and you shout out the front, no rape jokes, no rape jokes. But that rape joke, I think, Richard, yep. Do you think? I think you're feeling sorry for me, you're feeling scared for me, and then I break it by having, I've got the presence of mind to make a joke to myself, which empowers me, and the joke is at the expense of the rapist, potential rapist. Yes. He didn't actually rape me, if anyone's worried. I wouldn't be joking about it if he had. But do you see what I mean by that?
Yeah, but you get into difficult territory, don't you, at the minute? You know, it's just a funny joke, and it's about your life, and so it's all right for you to tell it, I think. I think it's interesting, because this subject, because if you have been raped and you want to joke about it, I think that's okay, if that's your way through it, to laugh at it, which people go through terrible experiences. Someone emailed me once and said, when I was in some article with lots of... when I was one of the new offenders, I was called, because I'd done Hitler Moustache.
Oh, yeah.
And was kind of badly misquoted, but all my stuff was about hating Pakistanis, so that's fine. Which was all taken out of context. So I did a joke about on one of the podcasts about saying, you should just decide which side is right and then just stick with that. So I'm India, Pakistan. I'm going to go for India. So I hate Pakistan. So it was in context.
It was a stupid thing.
But there was other people talking about rape in that, and then someone emailed me saying, "Well, I was raped, and the jokes helped me to get to deal with the situation." So should that person be not allowed to have jokes about that situation if it helps them?
No, okay. That's good. I like what you said.
Yeah.
I think I've killed the gig by talking about rape jokes. This was going really well.
It wasn't necessarily a rape joke, because you might have just at the last minute gone, okay, we don't know what happened. So you might go, I'm bored of being a Jehovah's Witness and I fancy bikers, let's go for it. I fancy pervert bikers.
No, that's
so there's
not...
a lot, there's a big leap to turn it into
it's
a rape
big,
joke.
It's a big leap. No. But I did get out of that situation by... I thought, right, well, if I'm going to die and something terrible is going to happen here, I should... So I make sure I please Jehovah and get into the paradise. Because you can get resurrected into the paradise. That's the other option. If you are dead and single... Jehovah's Witnesses agree with you on this, by the way. If you're resurrected, you're single.
I'm in.
And you come back into the paradise.
I've just got to die first, and then...
Then you get resurrected into the paradise, and you start with the fruit passing, and you're single at that point. But... they think it's a grey area. They think possibly the resurrected people will be eunuchs and you'll never have sex again. It's a long time, isn't it? Eternity for just loads of fruit.
It's a long time to have sex. You know, I think eternity is a long time to have sex for, though, as well. So that's
you'd get
bored of sex.
No.
You definitely would after eternity.
You'd mix it up.
After eternity. You couldn't mix it up that much. There's only so many things you can do, and it's a finite number of things.
I'm going to take you to Torture Garden.
Unless you can bring in, aliens and stuff. You could create aliens with new orifices. Consenting aliens, it's not a rape joke. They're dead anyway. Oh, it's necrophilia.
Consenting.
Oh, fuck. They've been resurrected. Resurrected aliens with, extra, holes in them. That's what an alien would have. It's going like this, pulsating.
What?
Yeah, then I'm up for it. But I bet there's something in Jehovah's Witnesses that says you can't have sex with pulsating alien vaginas. I bet there is.
I don't remember that being a specific rule. But I imagine, were you to ask, yes, that would be off the table. But... Yep. I find it interesting that you need new orifices. That's...
After infinity, I do. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Forever. I'm satisfied for another 50 years with the three or four orifices that I...
Three or four?
Yeah. They're on different people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can think of max three orifices that you can do the sex with.
My own hand?
That's not an orifice. That's a loop. That's
tell that to Jesus, who you like so much. So actually, that's
tell
four. There's
that
four.
To
four
Jesus
just not. There's
who
five,
like
six
so
on Jesus.
Much.
There's six. Yeah. There's four extra on Jesus.
Hey, Jesus doesn't have a vagina.
And Jesus would have. If he loved you, he would magic up a vagina for you. And he does love me, even after this bit. He still loves me. I go,
Jesus,
God, Jesus,
loves
slap
you.
A little vagina on there for me. Just in there, slap it on.
Jesus,
one that goes like that.
I feel like Jesus might... Jesus' love may make an exception around a herring-shaped hole. I don't know that Jesus' love extends this far. I think you're testing him. You're testing him. You're putting me right... I mean, Jesus is meant to love
me.
Us all.
He's here in the room.
He loves the little children
what
of the world.
What face is he pulling, do you think, as he's listening to this? He's here. Because he could be laughing along... It's a bit like you know, fuck off, Jesus. Don't laugh along, or he's looking offended. Don't be angry.
I don't think Jesus would be offended. I think Jesus was kind of cool. He was a hipster.
So
he was the outsider.
Just nothing.
He was the Richard Herring of Nazareth. He was an outsider. He upset everyone. He upset all the Pharisees.
Yeah.
He was called problematic. They wrote to him and said he's one of the new. What was the one they called you?
The new offender.
The new offender.
He was an offender.
He was an offender. He was
apostate. They crucified him.
They hated him. He used to keep sort of, you know, flipping them off and saying, oh, well, what do you say that I am? You know, he was absolutely Richard Herring. Yeah. He was. Yeah.
He wishes. Yeah. Do you think they'll be still talking about me in 2,000 years' time?
I find it hard to believe they wouldn't.
They'll still be listening to this.
Oh, yeah.
This will be a new religion. The alien vaginas thing has got that. Yeah. Swung it. So anyway, yeah, so you got out, though, of being a Jehovah's Witness.
I did. I got out of the house by showing them the watchtower, and one of them got interested.
Yeah.
And then the lead biker threw me out because someone started to get interested. And that is the thing. If you have a watchtower and you're in a hostage situation...
Yeah.
You just start saying, would you like to make a friend of Jesus? And they will release you from any hostage situation. I think that's key to whatever it is that you're... Any time you're in a hostage situation, you just say, are you saved? And they will immediately evict you from the plane.
Well, I mean, why would you take a Jehovah's Witness as a hostage? That's the worst person, isn't it? You're doing everything you can to avoid them coming in the house in the first place. Actually, in prison, just at least if you're gonna, I don't kidnap anyone, but if you're gonna kidnap someone, not. Anyway, let's ask an emergency question.
Yes.
I can't believe we got through that rape thing without having to ask one. So, I've got some new ones. I was just looking. So, I've got to remember that you did not grow up in the United Kingdom, so that's part of the.
Yeah, so don't ask me about bagpuss.
I won't.
No bagpuss questions.
Would you rather be lactose intolerant or the Prime Minister of the Central African Republic?
Do you know what?
Yeah.
Lactose intolerant because I've sort of given up dairy anyway.
Oh, have you? So it wouldn't be that.
Yeah, I don't think... But my life wouldn't change that much. But were I to be the Prime Minister of any African region,
it's a big commitment.
It's a lot.
You kind of have to go and live there.
The thing is, my podcast's doing really well now.
Yeah.
And I feel like it would be much harder to do it in Africa.
Yeah.
Slash sort of build the listenership.
Yeah.
And also the pressures of being a prime minister, probably this is probably quite time consuming.
Yeah. So it would be difficult.
Yeah, I'm going with lactose intolerant. Yeah.
And Simplicity Saranji is doing a great job out there, so why replace him?
It's hard to know.
Do you think thunderstorms were invented by NASA to muffle the sound of space battles?
No.
So someone genuinely asked that on the internet. I've just nicked that off something else. Have you watched something on Facebook Live that hasn't been totally shit?
Oh, yes, I have. Okay. Phil Jupiter's cooking show.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So he, for his friends, he cooks things and he lets you watch. But he does it all like it's an ITV Saturday morning cooking show.
Yeah.
But it's just like, but it's really lovely because you're watching him and then he goes, because you can see it comes on. So he goes, hello, Deb. And then you can write things to him. And I'll say, you know, I'll ask him a question and I'll be like, are you still up for doing that gig on Friday night? And he'll be like, he'll be cooking an omelette and showing you how to cook the omelette. And he'll go, yeah, I'll be there Friday night. So it's like watching an ITV cooking show on Saturday morning, except the presenter can talk to you.
Yeah.
You can't talk to them, but you can message them. And it's really wonderful. If you've, I don't know, but is that just for those people's friends, Facebook Live?
I don't know how it works, really.
You can't see it, but it's brilliant. I wish you could.
I think you could follow Phil Jupiter, you can find it. What is your most appealing habit? It's quite hard, isn't it? Because unappealing's easy. That's why everyone asks. But you've got to think of a habit and it's appealing. It's too difficult.
I've got
a great rainbow question. You don't know who that is. I asked you that one backstage. That one doesn't apply to you.
My most appealing habit is probably that I've got a sort of fairy godmother complex.
Oh, yeah.
So I like to help people. But to the extent where it's a bit too much. And I'm trying to quit it. I'm trying to stop it. But, like, I'll be at a party and someone will say, I'd like to do stand-up. And I'll be like, oh, well, you should. And then I spend all night kind of coaching them. And then I offer to help them write some material. And then I agree to make them a coffee shop on Saturday morning. And I book them a gig. And I go and see the gig.
Yeah.
And then I mentor them for 6 months. And then, you know, and then, but at the same time, somebody else has said, oh, I'm having problems getting promoted at work and I've got a difficult boss. And I'll be like, well, you know, why are they being difficult? Well, I think they're a bit sexist. I'm like, well, we're not having that. And then I get start coaching them, and I go to the coaching program, and I go and meet their boss. And it's I just get it into people. So I just really love helping people. But that's obviously not healthy, because why are you doing that? What are you getting out of that? Like, that's not normal. So I've tried to turn it into an Obi-Wan Kenobi complex.
Right.
Because fairy godmothers have a wand and they fix everything for you, whereas Obi-Wan Kenobi gives you a lightsaber and just teaches you how to use that.
Okay.
So if you were to say to me, oh, backstage, having a problem, the baby won't sleep, like before I would have come round and said, don't worry, you guys go to sleep, I'll babysit every night this week, I'll make sure she's you to sleep. Maybe
I like
you should
the
sleep.
Old
gym. Whereas now I might go, I've read a book about that and give it to you and leave.
Yeah, that's no good. You went to Canada as well to help another guy who'd listened to your program about the Jehovah's Witness.
That's part of the fairy godmother complex.
I mean, that's pretty intense. So you actually went to get
I went to Canada to help him out. Yeah, because he was a Jehovah's Witness, and he current Jehovah's Witness heard my radio show, and it was one of the things that made him wake up and realise this was a cult. And but he was clearly just sort of struggling slightly on his own, and understandably, because he's fourth generation Jehovah's Witness, and you know, no one outside. You're not allowed friends outside, and the punishment for leaving and being disfellowshipped is shunning. So you just have to completely turn away from someone you know. Like, we could have been best mates, and then I see you in Leicester Square, and I have to go like that, like you're not there, like you're dead.
Yeah.
Like, you're so dead, you're single. Like, you're so dead, you're single and not getting a blowjob. Yeah. That's how dead you are.
I don't know if that counts, if I'm shunned by... Am I allowed to... No.
So I went to Canada to help him out. Yeah. And, no, if you're shunned, you can't have sex with other people. That's not... No, your wife didn't say, till death to us part,
well,
or till
shunned.
Well, I've
had sex with Jehovah's Witnesses, but I couldn't anyway. That's the problem with them.
It's a tricky... Yeah, loop that you're in there.
Yeah, they've already sent me to Coventry, and then they're saying, you've got to go to Coventry again. I go, well, I'm already here. Bad luck.
One way ticket to Coventry, no returnsies. So I flew to Canada to help him. But also, that was so helpful for me. Like, I had a real epiphany in Canada, and I realised that, like, I'd been in a cult. Like, it was the first time I really faced it. And I ended up getting locked in the back room of a Kingdom Hall, as is in my new series of the radio show, by some elders who interrogated me for, like, half an hour with really sinister Canadian Jehovah's Witness elders. But it's hard to make the Canadian accent sinister. It's like they were saying, how's about Ryan's frenzy? And it was really sinister. It was like this sinister, religious FBI Canadian Jehovah's Witness.
Right.
Yeah, really terrible. So when I came out of that room, I was like, oh, I feel free. I feel liberated. I feel like I told them to fuck off, which I did.
Yeah.
I didn't say those words, but nearly. And so I felt really free from it. So sometimes helping others, I think the moral of my story is sometimes helping others is really helping yourself.
And then you can do a radio show about it. And you know, so you're helping yourself.
In so many ways. I'm just a selfish bitch.
It's interesting. So, I saw you do like business talks. There's a TED talk or something of you talking about stage fright and confidence and stuff, which I watched today, which is very interesting. So you do that's part of your many jobs that you do. How did you get into doing seminars about confidence?
I was doing teaching improvisation on the weekend. And some people would come along and they'd go, oh, you should come in. And BBC people would come all the time and go, we're trying to be more creative and listen to each other more and build on each other more. And we feel it's very, sometimes a quite negative, uncreative environment. And would you come in and teach some impro to us and help us?
Right.
So I went in and did that. But I felt like teaching impro in people's workplaces was doing the opposite effect. Like it was like... coming to impro on a Saturday without your colleagues, with no one you know, as an anonymous person, like for a year, would really change your life. It'll make you more playful. Mm. But it won't... If I just go in and force you to do it in front of your colleagues, it's going to raise your anxiety. Yeah. Like for half an hour, do you know what I mean? Or for half a day in a terrible... at work. Can you imagine anything worse than me coming in and forcing you to play Whose Line Is It Anyway games with people you work with? I mean, is there anything worse than that? It would be, that's real hell on earth, isn't it?
Yeah.
Switch, change, come into a genre, like with your boss. I mean, that does sound hellish, doesn't it? I don't think you're getting how awful that would be if I were to do that. So so I just developed stuff that I thought was actually helpful, which is now what I do.
So can people hire you to do that?
Are
you,
yeah, they do all the time. I do it every week. Yep,
it's good. I just watched and you were talking about how to appear confident and not have stage fright. Because I don't really ever get nervous before performing now, unbelievably. But, you know, it was really interesting to see you sort of explaining why people are nervous and how you stand when you're nervous. And, when you're just used to doing it, you do it sort of naturally.
Yeah, you intuitively do the things that I'm breaking down.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think performers should not watch it because then they start becoming conscious of what they're doing.
Yeah, that's the worst thing. Now, I shouldn't have watched it. Now I'm conscious of it.
Yeah.
It's a bit of lettuce there. Look, did you see that? It's a little Easter egg.
It's interesting.
And let's talk about the Guilty Feminist podcast, which you do with Sophie Hagen, who's been a guest on before. I wanted to tell you all that you asked about what happened with Prince Andrew and what I said with that.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought I'd tell you all about that again. You can view that if you go. There's a secret channel you can go to and watch it now if you're prepared to pay a little bit of money. So there you go. But I'm not going to tell you where it is. It's that secret. Guilty Feminist podcast is sort of you being... talking about feminism, but in a funny way, I suppose, because you're admitting where you've gone wrong a little bit and the things you've done.
It's such a complicated issue,
isn't it? Because it's simple in that we're talking about something that's about equality.
Yeah.
But then it becomes very... The minute you get into it, it starts to become a complex issue.
It really does. And I think what the podcast is doing, we say that we're exploring our noble goals as 21st century feminists and our hypocrisies and insecurities that undermine those goals. And we always confess stuff, like at the top we do an I'm a Feminist Bart, so I did like one that's like... So we admit true things, that like I'm a feminist Bart. One time I went on a women's rights march and I went into a department store to use the loo and I got distracted by trying out face creams. And when I came out, the march was gone. Now, obviously, I didn't tell the other feminists that. I told them I got arrested. I'm a feminist, but one time when getting on a light aircraft from Provincetown in Cape Cod to Boston, and I was asked my weight in front of the other six passengers so they could determine the amount of petrol they could put in the plane. I lied by a stone and a half, endangering the lives of myself, the fellow passengers, the pilot and a border collie that was along for the ride. And these are things that apparently women... Sophie first suggested it, because we would tell each other these things over brunch, and went, we should record this, because she was doing another podcast, and I was like, the other feminists will kick us out, we can't tell them. And she was like, no, I reckon other women feel this way. I reckon other women feel that they're not getting it right. And actually, there's been a big response to it, because other women do feel it. So they want to be feminist, but they also want to... Like, I really, 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 more than anything, want to close the pay gap. But pretty much equally, I want to look good sitting down naked. And that is not a noble goal, or a possible goal. That's not a plausible... In my lifetime, I will never look good sitting down naked. But do you know what I mean? Like, that's ridiculous. And not good. Good, what is good? See, even that is problematic. If I did that on the podcast, people would write in and say, why are you saying good? Is you mean like a billboard, and a billboard isn't good. You're good as you are.
Yes.
So, you know, you look good sitting down naked, Rich.
I sure do.
You do. Because unless you've got a reasonable expectation that you've got to look like Brad Pitt in Thelma and Louise, then, which is a really dated reference, but that's my idea of sort of, you know...
Yeah.
You know...
I look like Brad Pitt in about 20 years' time. That's what I look like.
Are you sort of a Benjamin Button we never saw?
Yeah.
Benjamin Button... In the 50th...
I've been mistaken for Brad Pitt by two taxi drivers.
Have you?
Yeah.
Which taxi drivers?
It was a bit dark. One bloke said to me, has anyone told you you look really like Brad Pitt? I'm not gay. It's exactly what he said. That's fine. You're allowed to.
Methinks the driver doth protest too much.
I'm not gay and like to have sex with ugly Brad Pitt lookalikes.
You might hook up with him in heaven.
I might hope so. And one was a female. I think I was with my wife. And I think the other... do you remember this, Katie? And we were going somewhere and I think she thought we were Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, which...
Oh, that's lovely. I could sort of see it with the hair.
But I was Brad Pitt. Oh, what's wrong with you? You're so unfeminist, you lot.
I can sort of see it though with the hair. That's his hair. It's like your hair now.
He started copying my look. That's why. For a bit.
That's exactly what happened. He's probably a big fan of your work.
I think he probably is. If you want to come on, Brad, I won't bring up the whole Angelina thing at all. So it's fine. That's all right. Now come on.
I don't trust him, Brad. He will bring it up. He told me he wouldn't bring up lipsticker, but look what happened.
But I think the thing is, for most people, like all of the issues of equality, it's getting so complicated that it sort of scares a lot of people away, right? So you'll say the right thing about something and then someone will come in and go, oh, but you're being offensive to this other group of people.
Yeah. All the time.
So it becomes a massively complicated thing, whereas you should just say, I think everyone should be equal regardless of whoever they are.
You should, but it does get complicated because equality is it's so nuanced. So white privilege is pervasive, and it's unlikely that in the time period, like it's unlikely for women, given we've only been able to vote for about 100 years. If we had caught up in 100 years, that would be remarkable.
Yeah.
And there's privilege everywhere. I went to France the other day. And I was doing one of my seminars that you mentioned. So there were speakers before me. So this is a big company in France. And a lady who's organising came up and said, do you mind if one of the other speakers speaks in French? And I went, we're in France. Why would I mind if someone spoke in French? She went, it's just, you don't really speak French. And I said, I know that. I'm well aware. And she went, but... you know, so that's we can ask them to speak in English. She just doesn't feel as confident. I'm like, we're in France. This is outrageous. And so that was sort of my opening five about how, like, what kind of privilege do English speakers have? That I've been to a yoga class in Copenhagen and thought, well, I'll just have to follow along. No, it was all in fucking English. A yoga class in Copenhagen should not be in English. It should be in Danish. And I almost had a go at the teacher for not doing it in a language I couldn't understand, because I'm like, this is absolutely outrageous. Wherever you go, as an English-speaking person, you have this incredible privilege. We just rock up everywhere and assume people will be able to speak our language. And if they don't, we're a bit annoyed. And we speak more loudly and more aggressively. And that's an example of the expectation of inclusion.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what it's all about for me, is like where we expect to be included. So white people have a very high expectation of inclusion wherever we go.
Sure.
We don't, but we don't notice that. When I first came to London, I got a job as a nanny, and I'd driven in Sydney, but I'd never driven in London before. And everyone said, oh, driving in London is so scary, driving in London. You know, you've got to be really aggressive. You've got to get out there. You've got to pull out. No one's going to wait for you. You've got to drive in London. You've got to be assertive. And I was like, and I was driving three kids around. So I thought, oh, God, you know, this is going to be scary. But I found this was a stereotype about Londoners, that they weren't impolite drivers at all. They always let you in. They were always polite. They were as lovely. And then about 6 months later, I got a boyfriend and I drove his car one day, and I just couldn't get out. And I ended up getting backed up into a cul-de-sac. And I was like, what's going on? And he turned to me and he said, you can't drive this car the way you drive the Land Rover, you know, like a tank down the middle of the road and everyone just gets out of your way. This is a VW Golf. No one's going to get out of your way. And I went, I don't drive the Land Rover like a tank. He said, yeah, you do. You drive it like a tank down the middle of the road and everyone gets out of your way. You can't drive this car like that. And I went, oh, I thought everyone else was polite. Turns out I'm an asshole. And that's the same for 6'4" men called Toby with pinky rings. They don't know they're an asshole. They think you're polite. All they've ever driven is a tank. So everyone gets out of their way. And they just don't understand what it's like to drive a VW Golf. But if you're a short Korean woman trying to work in a big corporation full of very tall, posh white men, you don't get given the right of way. And you do this and it makes you anxious and nervous, or it just makes you ram in and start smashing other people's wing mirrors off. And they're the two ways people get. They either get incredibly skillful at getting out, Or they just get very angry and start ramming their way into traffic.
Yeah.
Or they back away. Most people just back down a cul-de-sac and stay there and go, well, that road isn't for me.
Yeah.
But they're the three things. So my main thing when I go into businesses is diversity and inclusion, because I'm very, very interested in how we include ourselves. But I couldn't possibly have the information that I was driving rudely. I didn't know. I'd never driven anything else.
Yeah.
So I don't really blame tall white men for driving like they do. I just want them to have the experience inside the body of a Korean woman. For, I mean, actually, no, that sounds bad now. I've said that. That's not, I don't mean it like that. I don't mean, oh, shit. No, edit that out. Oh, my God, the feminists. I don't mean that. You know what I mean. You know what I mean. That if they could just drive a simulated body, even that, if they could just fuck the orifice of an alien, yeah, the throbbing orifice of an alien,
they would understand.
They would understand.
They would understand. They would just give up and they would stay there, so they wouldn't. If you could give throbbing alien vaginas to everyone, they wouldn't go out to work anymore, so the women could do all the jobs.
Could we have an emergency question, please?
I'll do a new one. But I think it's interesting, because I think the reason the Guilty Feminist podcast, and it's a great podcast, and the reason it works is because I think that the problem is that people feel, and incorrectly, I think, that they're being battered down, they're being, you know, because you have to reassess your life and you have to reassess all these things, and it is critical of you, and then people get upset because they think they're being criticised or they don't know what to say. I think like a lot of the rise of UKIP is because people thought, oh, we're not allowed to say anything anymore, which clearly they're allowed to say anything they want to carry on saying it. But, you know, they get to a point where they're badgered themselves the other way, and I think by doing humour about stuff, about any subject, I think helps. What you just said kind of explains all of that so much better than, you know, someone going,
yes, you're a bad person.
Yeah.
When people feel attacked, they bring the shutters down.
Yeah.
So it's finding ways. And we know that there's some kind of neuroscience that tells us that... It's not real research, that bit, is it? Some kind of neuroscience tells us, look it up, I'm sure it's true, that your defences come down when you laugh. And also when we laugh socially and collectively, our defences come down. But that's why comedy does have power.
Yeah.
Because if we're all laughing about how, you know, women in short skirts are sluts and they deserve it, and collectively a room laughs, that reinforces a view.
Yep.
So there is this just a joke. It's just bollocks. Your words have power, and your jokes especially have power. Jokes have more power than a really didactic, boring lecture, because it's a really encapsulated way that you can take that idea out onto the street and you can throw it at somebody. Passing jokes around. Now, not all jokes are to be taken seriously, and some are ironic, but especially on Twitter, it's really hard to know how your audience are receiving those.
Yeah.
Because your mates will know you're being ironic, but 7 million strangers will honestly believe that what you're saying is all women are bitches.
Yeah.
And if you are listening at home, Rich has done an ironic head bob. Which implies that he thinks all women are bitches. But also implies that he was playing with the irony so that he thinks all women aren't bitches. But
it was the wrong time to do it, wasn't it? It was the wrong time.
Well, is there ever a right time to do that, Rich? That's what I'm questioning.
I've learned a valuable lesson. I don't know. I think I haven't learned. I haven't learned a thing.
I think if you were going to learn a valuable lesson, you would have learned it before now. How old are you, Rich, now? Vaguely?
I'm quite young still. I'm under 50.
All your valuable lessons, I reckon, are learned by 45.
Okay.
Yeah, I think 45 to 55, you might learn 3 things. And then after that, you're learning nothing. That's how I'm seeing it.
All right, I'll ask you this. This is an interesting question to go to now. Does sex with a robot count as cheating if the robot is an exact copy of your partner in looks and personality? Or is it actually the best compliment you can pay to your partner, you know, and also the biggest waste of making a sex robot there has ever been?
Oh, that's a really interesting one. Does your partner know about this?
Well, maybe, yeah, I think so.
If they know about it.
So it's like you've gone away and I miss you so much that I will just have sex with an exact copy of you.
Yeah, I think,
that's quite sweet, isn't it?
In the future, that sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah.
In the future, Charlie Brooker will arrange it that we can all do that, surely. And yeah, that's a great idea, actually. If we had the technology, that means long-distance relationships would work a lot better.
True.
Because you go online and you go and you have the chat that you have, and you have the hologram, probably holograms then. And so it's like you're really in the room having dinner with them.
Yeah.
But a hologram having sex with you, I can only imagine. I wish I wasn't making these fingers now. A hologram making the sex with you is not the same, because you can't feel a hologram, but you can have dinner with a hologram, be lovely. But you then have the sex robot, so that now you can have a relationship with anyone, anywhere in the world.
Beautiful.
If anything, I think you should trademark that right now. Okay. And brand that as a I always find this hard to say. Raholistapur. Is that right?
That's weird that it went the other way around there, didn't it?
Raholistapur. Am I saying that correctly? Raholistapur. 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 Raholistapur.
No way out.
Okay, that's gone to much like a fascist rally now.
What about?
What? So that was an awkward. I don't feel this is, and that was not me. That was what. That's the product of the Hitler Youth movement. You were clearly starting.
Don't do anything I say, yeah. As long as it's repeating an acronym,
yeah,
with five letters.
Absolutely. Is that bit going to be on video? Can you please fucking delete that? Because that's because at some point, what if, say, I get a television show in America, yeah, and then that becomes, what's that, a GIF or something, a GIF. That's the worst thing I've ever done, and it can't be undone. Yeah. And that was not, that when people do that, it's not, can you please delete that now? Like, I don't, stop the recording and delete, because that is just me in a gold shiny top, leading a fascist rally. My life is fucking over. It was just like a spontaneous joke. I thought, oh, this is a build, this is an absurdity curve, this is going really well, and you all played along with it, you did it, and you fuck.
I've got an additional a bit of that question, which turns it around on a sixpence. How about if the robot is an exact copy of what your partner looked like when you first met them?
Oh.
And the personality of them when they first. Shh. Is that a compliment, or is that
I fancy my husband more now.
Do you?
Yeah, well, he was kind of. Are you there? Is that you?
Both of our partners. Here.
Is that? Are you in the front second row? Is that you? No, that's a different somebody else.
What?
Oh no, that's not my husband.
You just pick anyone out of the audience.
Oh my god! I so thought that was my husband. I saw it before, and I was like, "Oh, Tom's in the second row. You're not Tom at all. Who are you? Colin.
Wow.
I would have cheated on my husband with you tonight, thinking it was you. Oh my god! Do you know what I thought? Oh, he looks a bit odd in that light, and that's because he's a totally different man. Could I have a sex robot of Colin, please?
Yeah. That is a sex robot of your husband that we brought along.
Oh my god. What if that's the sex robot? Colin, what do you do? What?
I work in advertising.
Works you work in advertising. That's all right. Stick with Tom. Look, advertising's great. Don't, you know.
What's the best thing you've ever advertised, Tom?
Sex
with robots.
Seems unlikely. No, I think the Tom back then was good for Deborah back then.
Yeah.
But neither Tom couldn't be with me now, and I couldn't be with him then. Like, do you know what I mean? The old Tom would not be able to handle me. I'd just come out of a cult. I was quite young and naive and sort of wide-eyed.
Yeah.
If that Tom then meant this Tom now, he would just run a fucking mile. He'd be like, too much.
Yeah.
Is that true, Tom? Are you in?
He's run them.
Tom?
Yeah.
Yes. If that old you, young you, met me now.
This is a new emergency question we're working on.
What would you? You wouldn't be able to. That young Tom wouldn't be able to take on now, Deborah. I'd have a go. Did you say? Did you say I'd have a go? Oh, bless you. Have a go. Oh, that's lovely. Well,
it's nice,
could we role play that this evening?
So, well, there's lots more to talk to you about. By the way, I've been Googling, and her name's Meredith McNeil, the woman who plays the tennis-playing woman in Confetti. So it was really bugging me that I couldn't remember her name. So
Were you Googling while I was telling a story?
Yeah, no, I did it very surreptitiously earlier. I'm very good at this.
What story did you just ignore and think she's got them? Take away, I'll just tune out.
I can do everything. I can look at emergency questions. What about this one? Would you rather live in the waxy ear of a grumpy giant, eating only what flies in there by accident, and not being able to make a noise for fear of being ejected with a huge cotton bud, or live in Middlesbrough?
Oh. That is genuinely tough.
That is a tough question.
It's genuinely tough because I think at least with the first one, there's adventure, there's a story. I could get out of that and make an amazing Radio 4 show.
Yeah.
Deborah Francis-White rolls the dice, lived in the year of a giant, right? Yeah. Sure. I could probably get to make a feature film about that.
Yeah.
Like an animated feature film. Like there's so much opportunity if I can get my way out. But once you're in Middlesbrough, you're never coming out.
You're not allowed out.
That's the sort of... it's a one-way street from London to Middlesbrough. You can go from Middlesbrough to London, but I suspect London to Middlesbrough is... That's.
I think when you choose to go to you get off that train, you've decided you're staying in Middlesbrough.
You get off that train and there's no more blowjobs because it's as if you're dead. So, Ear of the Giant.
Yeah, cool. I think that's the correct choice.
You know, when you were saying it, I nearly stopped you going, whatever the other one is, definitely not this one.
Okay.
I genuinely almost thought, I must answer too early, but there you can...
You always must be careful not to... How would you get out of the waxy Ear of a Grumpy Giant? It's quite harder than you think.
Do you want me to pitch you the whole screenplay?
You just climb out.
I mean, it's an orifice.
If you've got hairy ears...
A giant's ear would be a very large orifice.
It would.
For
too big, I would say, for my purposes.
That's how big the giant is, Rich.
I was imagining he was big. If it's Richard Osman...
No, I don't mean... You don't mean surely a legal giant.
How big a giant? I'm imagining a massive giant.
Yeah, we're imagining 3-5-foot thumb, right?
I'm trying to work out how big someone would be... their ear to be the correct size for it to be a fit for my adequate penis.
How big is Richard Osman?
That's never been asked of me when I've said my adequate... He's 6 foot a lot.
Is he a legal giant? Humphrey Carr is not a legal giant.
I don't know if he's been legalised. I think he's an illegal giant. He lives his life travelling from place to place with people in his ear trying to get him out.
That's just slander. That's just slander. When this goes out, he'll come after you.
He will. Well, you know, I'm after him. He was very rude about me on his national. I've only got like 100,000 listeners. Everyone watches Pointless, and everyone thinks I'm the worst at Pointless now, thanks to him.
Do you know, if anything, it'll draw people to you because Britain loves a loser.
I don't think they do. Me and my wife went on Pointless. I'm not allowed to say what happened, but you know, he took the piss out of me as well on that.
Oh,
I think he fancies me.
He probably thinks you're Brad Pitt.
He might do. Well, look, there's so much more to talk to you about. Maybe we should get all the guilty feminists on another time, because I love learning about feminism and how wrong I am about it.
No, but we're all trying.
Yeah.
We're all failing and we're all succeeding, and that's what we have to remember.
Yeah.
We're all trying, we're all failing, we're all succeeding. And if you just can live with that paradox all the time, that's what it is, then things are okay. You just shouldn't beat yourself up for your inadequacies, Rich.
No. Sorry, I don't really. As long as I'm allowed, I just want to be allowed to do jokes about everything.
Yeah.
Whatever I think about them, whether I agree with them or not.
Your big contribution to feminism is you sit on the internet on International Women's Day.
That's true.
Do you all know about this? Yeah. Does anyone not know about this?
Yeah.
Okay, so for those people, on International Women's Day, do you know what the most common tweet is? Yes, what about International Men's Day? And do you know what Rich does? He spends the whole day on the internet from 4 a.m. till 4 a.m. saying...
It's November the 19th. To everyone who asks.
And it's a great service. Now, I personally believe that for some years, because there's so many of those tweets, for some years he's had an army of underpaid women in his basement doing that for him, out tweeting for him. I really don't believe he's paying them minimum wage, and it's actually the most unfeminist act. He has a sweatshop of young women.
Oh, believe me, I get accused of being, you know, I do get accused. Some people go, oh, typical man making it all about him. So, you know, you genuinely can't win with that kind of thing. Though I do it as a way that everyone else can get on with something else, I hope, because it is a stupid question.
Yeah. We wanted to do an episode with you on International Men's Day,
right,
where we come on and we talk about International Men's Day as a guilty feminist project, but then I was going to be away or something. We didn't make it work. But next year, can we do International Men's Day? You can't come on International Women's Day because we're having Clements Posey, who's a film star.
And so, you know, I am a man. I think it would be an...
Oh, yeah, that's the other main reason.
Let's make it all about me.
But we should definitely do on International Wednesday. It'd be fun.
Good. That's November the 19th. It's been lovely to talk to you, and there's loads more to talk to you about, so we'll hopefully get you back another time, because we haven't even talked about Peter Andre. That was good.
Oh, Peter Andre,
visa
yeah.
Thing. Listen to the radio shows, they're fantastic. Is the second series out already, or is it coming out?
It's come out. It's still on iPlayer right now. There's an episode about... There's a couple of episodes on iPlayer that you can listen to right now. So if you go to Deborah Francis White Rolls the Dice, or you just put Rolls the Dice iPlayer, it'll come up.
And all Guilty Feminist podcasts still ongoing?
Yes, guiltyfeminist.com. Right. And there's lots of episodes there. You can go back and listen to the first one was on nudity. Then we did ones on food and exercise and porn and all sorts of things. So there's always a topic. There's always a guest. We always do challenges. It's really fun. And Global Pillage, which is my diversity-based comedy panel show podcast, globalpillage.net, where it's very diversely cast. And also it's two teams of comedians versus the hive mind of the audience. And the audience normally win because diversity works, because you all together know more than Rich and I can know.
Tell that to Meredith McNeil.
That is a fucking good point.
Anyway, it's been lovely to talk to you, ladies and gentlemen.
Lovely.
Deborah Francis
Thank White.
You have been listening to Rich Jones at Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Deborah Francis White. Thank you to Pest for playing some music for us. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at Go Faster Strike. And thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, especially Orange Mark. The producer is Ben Walker. Not here again. I don't know what he does when I'm doing this, but he's never here. It's very unprofessional. It is a Sky Potato Fuzz and Go Faster Strike production. Hope you enjoyed this. If you did, why not come and see me do some proper stand-up that I've written and isn't just made up as I go along. I'm doing a show called The Best, which I'm touring all around the United Kingdom, mainly from February to May 2017, though I'm in Bridgewater in December. So if you're in Bridgewater, why not come and see me? Thanks for listening, and bye, and I'll see you again. Goodbye.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And, would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.